Today on Maine Calling, the air conditioning dilemma. It may be cool and comfortable today, but if you remember, July in Maine started with a heat wave. Meteorologists tell us that in Portland, July 1st through 15th was the hottest start to any July in recorded history. And there's more heat forecast to come. We've all noticed it. As the climate becomes warmer and less stable, heat waves and heat advisories are becoming more common in Maine. And with that, more and more people are using air conditioning, which in turn contributes to greenhouse gases. So, is AC accelerating climate change? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss air conditioning, its impact on the warming planet, its critical role in mitigating health problems, whether heat pumps offer a viable alternative, and what the future holds for Maine summers. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downey's communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Call it a conundrum. The world needs air conditioning to get through increasing heat waves, but using air conditioning contributes to global warming. What to do about this feedback loop, and how does it play out in Maine, where AC traditionally has not been used as much? Joining me, Sean Burkell, Maine State climatologist and assistant professor with the Climate Change Institute and Cooperative Extension at the University of Maine. Dan Burgess, who is director of the Maine Governor's Energy Office, and Michael Stoddard, executive director of Efficiency Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Where do you stand on this issue? Have you held out and not gotten air conditioning? Or do you use air conditioning when you need to and not otherwise? Do you have another tip to share with our audience? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Sean, I'll start with you. The reason, of course, we're seeing more people use air conditioning in Maine is because there are more heat waves than before. So I'm going to start by asking about those heat waves. Are they the result of human-caused global warming, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, good morning, and thank you, Jennifer. The increased heat that we've been experiencing is related to climate change and the overall warming that is taking place. And the impact of heat waves and whether or not there's an increase in frequency and severity depends on that. It's a per region basis. But as the world warms, overall, we do anticipate from climate model projections to see more heat waves becoming more common and in many places more severe. Maine has seen heat waves recently. And if we look at the historical record, in many cases we can find historical analogs, but the overall increase in heat, particularly during the summertime, is apparent. And I think a key part of this, especially for the Northeast, is that we're seeing a faster rate of increasing overnight low temperatures as opposed to daytime high temperatures.
So it's not cooling down at night like it used to.
Exactly. And that's contributing to increased AC use because when the nights don't cool off as much, it's more uncomfortable for sleeping. And so that's a significant component of what we're seeing here in Maine. And now this relates to, as the world warms, that the warming is also associated with, not just in the atmosphere, but in the oceans. the excess heat associated with greenhouse gas warming. The vast majority of the excess heat is being stored in the upper levels of the world oceans. There's also enhanced evaporation into the atmosphere, so there's more moisture contained in a warmer atmosphere, and that leads to this overall increase in dew points and overnight low temperatures. And anecdotally, I think many people who've lived in Maine their whole lives have noticed that summers, especially late summer into the fall, it just seems more humid, anecdotally. And we can also pair that with weather station observations and confirm that the data show that as well. And so July, August, and September. September has warmed significantly over the past 20 or 30 years. And that includes overnight low temperatures. And again, anecdotally, I think we have all noticed that.
So Maine, known for crisp, dry air, is seeing less crisp, dry air and seeing not only more warm days, but more warm and humid days. And that humidity is in large part caused by evaporation from the oceans that are warming.
Yes. And the last couple of years, the North Atlantic Ocean overall has been at historic warm levels. And so that has contributed to the mugginess. When we get airflow from the south, which is fundamentally air that's circulating off either the Gulf of Mexico or the western portion of North Atlantic, the southerly winds bring in the very warm, humid air. And so in July, in the first half, 3 weeks in July or so, we had overall airflow from the lower latitudes, as well as there was a heat wave in June. Whenever these weather patterns set up, that's when we get heat and humidity, and it's the humidity that's increasing along with the warming of the ocean surface temperatures. Just to wrap this up, the relative length of the warm season has increased over recent decades. And so we're getting summer temperatures later into the year. So again, that's the September timeframe, creeping into the fall.
What was I going to say? And we will talk about the impact on human health of all of this a little bit later on the program. But Sean, before I move on to the others, I want to sort of tie together what we're talking about today, which is air conditioning. Air conditioning can be a contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. Some call this conundrum a feedback loop. So can you put this in perspective? How much does the use of air conditioning contribute to the increase in greenhouse gases, and in what way? How does it do so?
Well, one thing to consider is that as the world warms in response to greenhouse gas emissions, the warming is being driven by what we'd call the overall radiative forcing, and that forcing is coming from the overall contribution of greenhouse gases from different sectors, different contributions from electricity demand, from fossil fuel burning in automobiles. Now, of that entire portion of greenhouse gas emissions, we separate that into sectors. It's the component or the sector that relates to electricity usage, and then that percentage increase in demand. And that particular number is probably fairly small, but significant if it is to double worldwide because of increased demand. Now, to flesh that out, there are researchers who are specifically looking at this. If there's two times as much energy demand from AC use over the next 50 years, then that could be an increasingly large contributor to the overall greenhouse gas emissions budget. That's why it's important to have a conversation of how do we recognize the need to produce cooling, especially in areas that are going to be more impacted by more severe heat waves, and how can we develop more efficient sources of cooling, and what are other mitigation strategies, such as in urban centers, adding shade trees and so on. So the overall effect is probably relatively small, but important nonetheless, because it could increase significantly.
I see. Michael Stoddard, I'll turn to you. It used to be that people would say in Maine, oh, we only have a few hot days a year, so you don't really need AC. That seems to be changing. What is your experience? Do you see more and more people getting some sort of air conditioning?
Yeah, our recent studies show that 83% of Maine homes have some form of air conditioning in them. And that's a way bigger number than I think anyone, any of us would have imagined, certainly 10 or 20 years ago. So a lot of folks have it. And regrettably, what most folks turn to when they want to add some air conditioning capacity to their living room or their bedroom or something is they go out and get the cheapest air conditioner they can find. And that's what we refer to as a window air conditioner, the kind that goes in that space in your window and you close the window around it. And regrettably, those are pretty inefficient. They're cheap to buy, but they don't make cooling very efficiently. So you're right. It's out there. It's quite prominent now. The vast majority of homes, and certainly most commercial spaces, you think of an office building or a hospital or a school building, a lot of them have air conditioning because you need to be comfortable in those spaces to get your work done or to do your studying. But increasingly, we're seeing it in homes as well. So air conditioning is a fact of how we use energy in our homes and businesses in Maine.
Dan, I'll turn to you. And we're going to talk about heat pumps or mini splits, whatever people like to call them, but they have entered the picture as a more efficient alternative for regulating the temperature of home. And usually we're talking about heating. Usually we're talking about winter, but they work pretty darn well in the summer too, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer, for having me on. They do work well in the summer. They're more efficient than the window units that Michael was mentioning. I just anecdotally, you know, I grew up on a small dairy farm in central Maine where we were haying every summer during these summer hot summer days. Those summer days now are hotter. I remember standing around the fan as it goes back and forth trying to get in front of it during those days. Now we're standing in front of a heat pump and are kind of in that cool room. And so I think people across Maine with, policies and programs that the governor has worked with the legislature to move forward, we're seeing heat pump adoption, really kind of nation leading heat pump adoption. And again, people think of it as for the winter time, but it really the cooling part of it, I think we're seeing folks talk about more. We've got more than 100,000 heat pumps adopted. We hit that goal early, have 175,000 heat pump target by 2027 coming. We're working really closely with the team at Efficiency Maine Trust and across entities to move that forward and have received new federal funds for that. So definitely seeing a lot more heat pump adoption. I might also note that, so listeners know, we share an electric grid with the rest of New England. And so as we are electrifying both the heating and cooling sector, so are the states around us, right? And so we're working collaboratively with the other states to plan for that electric load growth and to manage that. We have a regional grid operator called ISO New England, whose job it is to do that. And Sean mentioned these kind of recent heat waves. We're seeing that on the electric sector too. Right. So in June, we saw really high electric usage over those 5 days and actually had our peak summer day during that time period. As Michael mentioned, right when you get home, kind of 6 to 7 p.m. During one of those times, that's when folks are turning on their ACs, turning on their appliances and staying cool. And so we're working with our regional partners and those in the state to manage that load growth.
Sean.
Thanks. I would like to also mention a statistic from the International Energy Agency, getting back to the overall contribution in terms of electricity demand that AC affects. It's currently estimated that about 20% of electricity demand from buildings worldwide is associated with either AC or fan use, just to give a better sense of the percentages that we're talking about.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I just want to chime in that there is some good news here, and Dan hinted at it, which is that heat pumps will provide air conditioning at one half the consumption of a regular window air conditioner. So we do have some technology coming along now that will help us deal with this hot, humid weather in a way that is, excuse me, less consumption and less of the kind of emissions that Sean is talking about. So Sean mentioned the ways to mitigate this. Number one is to find more efficient forms of air conditioning. The other component is how do we make the power that serves the grid? And there's relatively good news on that front as well, thanks to a lot of the work that Dan's office is doing. We're getting a cleaner and cleaner grid because we're switching to more and more renewables and away from the fossil fuels. So when Sean cites data from around the world, I'm sure that that's correct. But we're fortunate to live in a part of the world where our grid is getting cleaner and cleaner. And so there is a hopeful pathway forward here to have our air conditioning that we need and to have it cleaner and more efficient.
Well, and let me ask you all, and I'm not sure Michael or Dan who wants to answer this, but my understanding is that part of the issue is the use of electricity, and air conditioning uses electricity, and many of the sources of electricity depend on fossil fuels. But isn't another part that air conditioning units themselves emit carbon dioxide? I mean, Dan, I'll let you talk about that. Do heat pumps emit less?
Yeah, so why don't I talk about the electricity side, and maybe Michael can talk a little bit about the second part of your question. So we are, when you look at the amount of electricity that the region is going to use, to Sean's point, it'll likely double over the next, you know, decade or two as we electrify more of our building sector. We right now are over-dependent on natural gas to produce our electricity, to the tune of about 50% of our electricity coming, being provided from gas. However, Maine has a law that 80% of our energy will come from renewable energy by 2030, and the governor set a goal of 100% by 2040. And so we are seeing new clean energy added to the grid every day. We have more than 1,000 megawatts of solar installed here in Maine, close to 1,000 megawatts of wind, 700 megawatts of hydro. So we're seeing, you know, really significant resources. And just to give you an example, during that June heat wave, when we were using more electricity kind of during our peak time, during the day, over 20% of total demand during that was electricity from that came from behind the meter solar. So that's as much as two nuclear power plants in the region's worth of solar providing fossil fuel free electricity to the grid and helping us manage those kind of peak days. And so we are on the right trajectory, and we're, as Michael said, already seeing the results on those now, on those policies now. And so Michael, I'll turn it over to you.
I'll turn to this other one. Right. So Michael, I'm reading right now from the National Renewable Energy Laboratory saying air conditioning is responsible for 3.94% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So carbon dioxide is coming out of air conditioning units. What about heat pumps? Do heat pumps emit the carbon dioxide?
So I just want to clarify. I don't think it's coming out of the units themselves. It's coming from the power plants that are making the electricity that power the units. But there's nothing that is emitted from a heat pump or an air conditioner, for that matter, on site. They just... So there's no emissions on the site. It's coming from the power plants that are serving those. Now, they may be talking about leakage if the refrigerant leaks. That's not good for the environment. So it's possible that's what you're referencing.
I see.
That's only when it's malfunctioning. That shouldn't happen. And eventually your unit will stop working if it's leaking. So that's how you can, that's one way you can find out that it's leaking.
Okay.
It doesn't leak a lot. If it does, it's not going
to. So I need to go to a break, but I just want to wrap up what you all are saying. The concern about greenhouse gases is that air conditioning units or central air use energy, and energy in many cases is caused by power plants around the world are fueled by things like coal and natural gas. But here in Maine, our energy mix is changing for the better, and less and less and less of our energy mix is fueled by fossil fuels. I see you all nodding. I've wrapped it up fairly accurately to head into our break. So many of you calling in with comments and emailing in. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. How can Mainers deal with hotter temperatures without using air conditioning? With me, Dan Burgess, Director of the Governor's Energy Office, Michael Stoddard, Executive Director of Efficiency Maine, and Sean Burkell, Maine State Climatologist, Assistant Professor at UMaine, also with UMaine Cooperative Extension. Share your comments and questions about air conditioning, about heat. Email talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Rebecca Lincoln, who is an environmental epidemiologist with the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Thanks so much for calling in, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for having me.
Talk about extreme heat and humidity, whether it's a problem in Maine, and how it affects human health.
Sure. So extreme heat is a serious public health issue, even in Maine. I think there's been plenty in the news over the last few summers of how heat-related illnesses are rising over the country, and extreme heat is causing serious health problems in other regions. We do tend to think of Maine as a cooler climate and that we're somewhat well protected from extreme heat here. But I think as we've seen this past summer and with other types of climate-related weather impacts like wildfire smoke and severe flooding over the last year or so, this is something we're going to be experiencing more frequently. So in terms of health impacts in the state of Maine, we do see health impacts every summer, everywhere from around 100 to 350 emergency departments for heat-related illnesses like heat exhaustion and heat stroke. This summer, as everyone is probably aware, it's been hotter than normal, and we've had a couple of very hot stretches in the last few months. We've already seen more than 350 visits to emergency departments around the state for those heat-related illnesses, and we're not even into August yet. So that's definitely a sign that heat-related illness and paying attention to extreme heat are things that we need to be more aware of in the summers going forward here in Maine.
And tell us who's most at risk. I'm going to guess people who are older and maybe people who have asthma. But I know that asthma, for example, is very common in Maine.
Yeah, so we do have concerns for certain groups of people who we know are just physiologically more at risk from extreme heat exposure. Older adults, infants and young children, people who are pregnant, and people who have chronic diseases like asthma or other respiratory diseases, kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, you know, these things do trouble people all year long, but extreme heat can really exacerbate them. And folks with, you know, in those categories or with those conditions do need to be especially mindful. We've also been doing some research at Maine CDC recently to try and understand what activities and settings are also most risky. And what we've found is a lot of people are, doing regular things outdoors during hot weather that put them at risk and send them to emergency departments, things like hiking, biking, and running during the hottest part of the day, mowing the lawn or doing yard work outside. And we also see a really significant impact for folks that work outdoors or in hot environments. And that's something that we really want to be keeping an eye on as the weather warms up here in Maine and helping folks at their workplace, whether that's outdoors on a construction site or doing road crew work or indoors in a kitchen or warehouse or other hot environment, that people really need to be mindful and protect their health in those settings too, both employers and employees.
Rebecca, it strikes me when you name the list of people for whom heat can really be detrimental, and you say older people, younger people, people with respiratory diseases, diabetes, you start to add that up, and that's pretty much most of Maine, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's something that everybody needs to be aware of in the summers, I think, going forward.
Yeah. So from your perspective, air conditioning has clear benefits.
Yes, absolutely. Air conditioning is one of the things that we know from a lot of research is protective, keeps people safe in extreme heat, and is one of the best ways to physiologically cool your body down when the weather outside is hot. So we definitely recommend that people stay inside if they can during really hot weather, that they seek air-conditioned spaces if they don't have air conditioning at home. But we also recognize that you know, as you've been hearing for the first part of this hour, that doesn't come without consequences for climate change too. And so we want to make sure that people understand alternate ways of seeking cool spaces if they don't have air conditioning at home or don't want air conditioning at home. We always direct people to call 211 and find a cooling center near them if the weather's hot and they can't stay cool at home. The Maine Emergency Management Agency maintains a great list on its website and on social media of all the cooling centers that get opened up around the state when the weather gets hot. And even going to a place you know is air conditioned, like a library or shopping center or out to a movie, these are great ways to access air conditioning if you don't have it at home.
All right. And before we let you go, give us some other tips. Other than finding a place that's air conditioned, what are some tips for cooling down? Is, for example, jumping in a lake or jumping in the ocean? I know it makes you feel good right away. Is that beneficial for your health? Does that have a lasting effect?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. So cooling your body down any way you can is certainly beneficial. And we recommend people, you know, immerse in cold water wherever they can. If that's a lake or the ocean, great. If it's just a cold shower at home, that can be really helpful too. We've seen some recent research that's really shows the benefits of just putting your feet in a bucket of ice water for a little while can really cool the body down quickly. Same with your forearms or wetting your clothes if you're out and want to cool down quickly but don't have access to a whole lot of water. The sort of common sense things that people have been doing for a long time, you know, already without air conditioning, these are also still good ways to cool yourself down now.
Rebecca, thank you so much for calling in. That was Rebecca Lincoln with the Maine CDC. Calling in now, Fortunat Mueller, who is president and co-founder of Revision Energy. Thanks so much for calling in. I understand that your own personal experience is similar to so many people's, that you didn't used to think you needed air conditioning, but that might have changed.
Yeah, Jennifer, that's exactly right. And thanks for taking my call. You know, for the first 10 years we lived in Maine, we've moved to Maine in 2006. We never used air conditioning in our house. And when we put heat pumps in our house, I was sure that I was putting them in exclusively for displacing fossil fuels, for, you know, getting rid of our oil boiler. But it's definitely been the case for us, and we hear this from lots of our customers around the state, too, that that increasingly the air conditioning is a really important co-benefit when they're making the change from, you know, gas or oil to heat pumps for heat. And instead of using them for, you know, one or two nights of summer, they're using them for one or two or three weeks of summer, because as your guest previously said, you know, the nights are staying warmer. And so even if you just run them at night to be comfortable when you're sleeping, it really makes a big difference.
All right. And we talked already a little on the program about energy efficiency, and this is really your wheelhouse. Can you characterize the difference between using a heat pump for cooling versus an air conditioner?
Yeah. You know, the efficiency of cooling equipment, there's a number of different metrics that it's measured by, but one of the common ones is something called SEER, the seasonal energy efficiency ratio. And sort of any air conditioner you buy will have a rating. And so, you know, a pretty decent window air conditioner might have a SEER, you know, on the order of 12 or 13. Mini split, a good mini split, the kinds that, you know, Michael and Efficiency Maine are supporting, putting in across the state, can have a SEER of 30 or more. So, you know, twice as efficient, or they use half as much energy for the same amount of cooling as a window air conditioner. Mini splits in particular, because they are, you know, heating and cooling typically just the space you are in, can be even more efficient, right? Because instead of cooling the whole house, you're cooling just your bedroom overnight, or just, you know, just the living room and kitchen where you spend your day.
Well, Fortunat, thank you so much for calling in. Fortunat Mueller with Revision Energy. We're going to go to Connie, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Connie. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I think it's great what the state is doing, getting heat pumps out to everybody, and sounds like there's going to be twice as many soon. I don't have one yet. I have friends who do. And when they break down, there are not enough technicians in the state to keep up with the heat pumps that are out there. She had to wait a month. A friend of mine had to wait a month to get a technician to fix it. So whatever the state might be able to do to get training out there, it'd be a good job for people to maintain these heat pumps. Thanks.
Dan.
Yeah, I want to point out, I appreciate that call. So we have invested, even just yesterday, made an announcement about $2 million in workforce training, clean energy training. And part of that is to address that exact issue. So $2 million from Senator King and Representative Pingree that the governor announced yesterday to do training for a number of different activities, but one of them is exactly that. How do we make sure that we've got the workforce we need to meet our clean energy needs and our efficiency needs? We'll point out we have more than just broadly 15,000 people working in the clean energy sector. So we do have a good base of folks in different areas, not just heat pump technicians. But I do also want to plug our new clean energy jobs network, MaineCleanEnergyJobs.com, which has openings, training opportunities active right now. So if you're interested in the field, check out CleanEnergyJobs.com, MaineCleanEnergyJobs.com.
Michael.
Thanks, Jennifer. I also want to add that when Connie does go shopping for her heat pumps, which I hope she does soon, she should ask the folks that she's getting price quotes from if they provide service. So there are more and more folks like Fortunat's company and others in that space that are offering they're offering services, and they make it clear up front that if you buy your heat pumps from them, they will also help you maintain them. And they'll be there when you have that occasional issue where you need some repairs. So you should ask people if they do provide that service or not, because some of them do, and they're adding more and more of it thanks to the programs that Dan just referenced.
Connie, thanks for your call. An email here from Vinny with a tip. Anyone who has stepped into their cellar on a hot day will appreciate the cooler air. On hot days, I place a fan at the bottom of the stairs to blow that air up and one at the top of the stairs to assist in drawing that air into the living area. Works great for me and my friends. So thank you, Vinny, for that email. Here's an email from someone named Pine. Recently, my town dug up half of a mile of Main Street to replace and repair water and sewer and water lines, widen the street, and replace old curbing. To do this work, they cut down most of the established shade trees along the street. Now all the houses along that street are exposed to full sun all day and will have to buy air conditioners to cool their living spaces. Why did they not bury the utility lines while they had the street dug up? Leave the trees they could and replace the ones they had to remove. Such a discouraging, short-sighted policy makes me angry. So I know none of you work for the organization doing that work in, and we don't know what town it is, but Dan, it does speak to coordination and statewide coordination and maybe all getting on the same page and heading in the same direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. You know, I think the work that's being done that Rebecca mentioned by the CDC in coordination with the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation in the Future and really also the Maine Climate Council taking a holistic view of not just air conditioning, but how we're working together to combat climate change and grow our economy and be more resilient. I think we're doing that at the state level. I don't know the specifics of this project. I do know that obviously trees are can help with cooling, and but I think coordination is really important.
Yeah, and Sean, I want to turn to you. We all know that it's cooler under a shade tree in the summertime. Cows know that. You see cows gathered under big oak trees and fields and things like that. But is there data? What can you tell us about the impact of trees, and especially shade trees, on our climate?
Well, I don't have the specific numbers right readily available, but it does have a considerable impact in terms of in large urban areas. There is the urban heat island effect, and that includes not just the pavement and the buildings, but also an overall far sparser cover of vegetation. And by just stepping out of the sun in under the shade of a tree or stand of trees, that can drop the temperature by several degrees. And so I do think that's an important factor. It's a very important factor. And just from my own experience, our house is relatively exposed to the south. And I noticed compared to other people who I know who have a lot of shade trees around, that their homes tend to be a little cooler on the inside. And so it does make a difference. And then of course, just to add that there is also this balance, because as trees get taller, we have to worry about, are they too tall and does that pose other risks? But overall, there is a great benefit to having shade trees.
I do need to go to another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, our topic is air conditioning, especially in light of recent and increasing heat waves. With me, Michael Stoddard with Efficiency Maine, Sean Burkell, state climatologist with UMaine and the Cooperative Extension, and Dan Burgess with the State Energy Office. You can join our conversation if you're quick, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Before the break, we were talking about tips to help keep your home cooler. And Michael, you wanted to mention that, you know, insulation isn't just good for the wintertime and keeping heat in.
Right. There are things, we were talking about things that you can do on the outside of your house, like having shade trees, but there are things you can do on the inside of your house too. There are little common sense things like pulling the shades to keep the sun out during hot, sunny days, and that can actually have a pretty big impact. But clearly, putting insulation in your attic and walls will really make a big difference on the indoor temperature and keeping that heat out in the summer and keeping it in the winter. So as you know, we have programs to help people pay for those projects that are, they can get tons of information at our website at efficiencymaine.com, and we would encourage people to take a look at that.
Great. We'll go to Robbie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Robbie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I live in an older condo building in Portland, Maine, and our association has regulations in place that prevent the installation of heat pumps. I'm curious if any of the guests have any insight into some legislation that might be happening that would help all residents of Maine install these, you know, more efficient and often life-saving tools. And if not, if they have any tips on how a resident could, you know, pitch an association to maybe change these regulations.
Thoughts, Michael, Dan, is this something you have run into in your work very often, associations that forbid heat pumps?
No, I can't say that I've come across this specific before. There are occasionally issues with historic buildings where there are concerns about changing the aesthetic from the exterior. That doesn't sound like what's happening here, but I suspect that it is based on an aesthetic concern. And I think it's something that the residents should talk with the condo association about and or talk to folks maybe at City Hall, because I do think longer term, all of the homes in Maine, whether they're in a condo or an apartment or a standalone single family home, we are moving in the direction of using heat pumps for all of our heating and cooling. So 20 years from now, that system is going to have to work in that set of buildings. So they got to find a way around that. It's good. There's good news that the manufacturers are coming out with many more types of heat pumps, so they don't all look like the kinds you've grown familiar with over the last 10 years. They're starting to be more discreet. And I think somebody should raise that issue with the condo association and ask them to revisit it.
Robbie, thanks for your call. We're going to go up to Orono and Glenn. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead. Glenn, are you there? A Okay. So my note from the producer here says, Sean, that Glenn wanted to ask, how much more warming can we expect in summers for the next 20 years or so? What are projections showing you?
Well, in terms of summer temperature, I'd have to look at the precise numbers, but if we think on the annual mean, and the summer component will be a little bit less than this, but between now and 2100, there's a range depending on the worldwide greenhouse gas emissions, but anywhere from 2 degrees to 10 degrees Fahrenheit. And so the trajectory that we find ourselves on will, that either means a summer with a lengthening of, say, on the order of 2 weeks or maybe a little longer, and more severe heat waves, or less. At this stage, when we project out, say, to 2100, there's still a lot of uncertainty. It depends on choices that are made worldwide and how we reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But that's the overall range, is a warming, an average warming of 2 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit. 10, of course, is quite significant.
Yeah. We'll go to Belinda calling from Bangor. Hi, Belinda. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I have a tale to tell. I was granted a heat pump from PennCap and very excited about it. So I used it for January, and my electric bill went from $78 to $178. Of course, I was mortified. So I used it for a little bit in February. When that bill came in, it was still up $100 a month. And I thought, what am I going to do? I can't do this. I get LIHEAP. So I had to go back and start using my oil burner, back to fossil fuel. And I made a bunch of calls. I called Versant. I called Maine Efficiency and a couple of other places. And nobody knew what to say to me in regard to having it jump over 100%.
Okay. Who wants to take this one? Dan, are we hearing this? Are we hearing that people are switching to heat pumps and seeing their electric bill go up far more than they expected it to?
I think this is a really important question to talk about, and then also to recognize that people's experiences are often different home to home, depending on depending on the home characteristics and how things are being used. I think broadly, if one is installing a heat pump for and using it in the winter, it is likely displacing something that doesn't use electricity to make heat, right? And so you're using a heat pump, but you're likely not using, let's say, an oil boiler. And so your electricity bill may go up, but your oil bill will go down. And I think, you know, even in my own home, kind of figuring out how to compare the two month to month can be challenging. But I think that folks should anticipate their electric bill to rise, but their other bills to drop. And at the same time, I do think we need to, you know, the CAP agencies and Maine Housing and others that are administering LIHEAP and others, you can switch benefits to electricity if you're using more electricity. And so case by case, I'd encourage folks to definitely talk to their CAP agencies and others, and also be mindful of, you know, the money saved, even though your electric bill may be going up.
So what you're saying is that for Belinda, she should be able to take the money that she has been getting for oil heat from LIHEAP and put that toward her electric bill?
Well, on the LIHEAP specifically, you'd need to talk to the CAP agency to kind of switch the benefit from, you know, heating to electricity, but generally, yes.
And Michael, you wanted to join that conversation?
Yeah, I just wanted to second what Dan is saying, is we all have a bit of a education process we have to go through as our economy shifts away from oil burners and boilers to this new technology, the heat pump. But we are switching the fuel type. So while Belinda's electricity bill went up because she used the heat pump more, which makes perfect sense, her oil bill should have gone down by more than that same amount. So she should be saving money. Part of the program changes we introduced in Efficiency Maine's programs last year was to really encourage homeowners to go all in on heat pumps and put in enough heat pumps so that they can heat their whole home just using heat pumps and turn off their oil boiler so they don't use it anymore. And on average, in a Maine home that does that, even after you pay a much bigger electric bill, which you will because you're using more electricity, you're saving so much on heating oil that you'll probably save more than $1,500 a year, closer to $2,000 a year for an average home. So that's the formula that we expect to see. I hope that Belinda can get hers working in a way that that happens. And as Dan said, it is possible to ask your CAP to change where your LIHEAP benefit goes. It can go to your oil dealer, or you can have it go to your electric utility.
Good luck to you, Belinda. I'm going to go to this email from Charlie. Is there any difference between a dehumidifier and air conditioner to mitigate these higher humidity numbers? So lots of people have a dehumidifier in their basement, and it contributes to the cool temperature. Is it helpful in a home? In upstairs, in the bedroom or the kitchen?
I think I'll start, and I'm not an expert on this, but first of all, when you dehumidify, it gives you the feeling that it is cooler and more comfortable in that space. It's nice to note that heat pumps do have a dehumidification mode, so you can use them to air condition, or you can also use them to dehumidify, and they do that quite efficiently. Also, if anybody is interested in switching out their water heating system to a heat pump water heater, those also dehumidify, which can be a very nice side benefit in your basement to keep it drier.
All right. I want to say that we have two emails, an email from Rob and an email from Lynn, both with the same story. Both have heat pumps and solar energy and believe that they have had a terrific return on their investment, comfort year round, and and feel as though it's a solution that minimizes environmental impacts. I mean, Dan, that's the dream, right? I mean, too expensive for everybody in Maine to do that right now, if we're talking practically, but nice when you can do it.
Yeah, I do want to, that's right. And I want to say that federal funding along these lines have been awarded to the state to develop rooftop projects for low and moderate income individuals that from the Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, the Solar for All program are coming to us to make these projects more affordable for Maine people. And we've just received notice of that. It's a $62 million award, and we're going to be putting a new program together over the coming months to help more folks get rooftop solar on their house and ultimately possibly energy storage, which both our office and Efficiency Maine are working on as well.
We'll go to Eric calling from Rockland. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just had a quick anecdote. I used to work at a high-end furniture shop, and we were delivering a table to this couple who bought a house on the water on Route 1 in Rockland. And we went in and brought in the house. It was a hotter day, not super hot, 90-degree days, but it was a hotter day. And they were apologizing for not having the AC on. And they were from Texas, and my buddy and I just smiled and looked at each other and told him to open a window. There was a nice, cool sea breeze coming off the water. And I just think, sometimes the simplest things are better.
Yeah, and Eric, your point brings up, it's a great story, but also that, what we're discussing here in Maine is really so much less dramatic than in so many parts of the country. Sean, I'll turn to you. We are talking about heat waves that last a week or two, whereas the rest of the country is talking about whole seasons where everything is unbearable.
Yeah, less dramatic, but it is changing. And as the world warms, Maine will warm as well. One aspect of why we tend to not get such long heat waves is at our latitude and on the eastern portion of the continent, there's a jet stream that's never that far away. And depending on circulation, cold air can swoop down. But with world warming, we will see warmer summers.
Yeah, well, thank you, Eric, for that anecdote, and thank you all for joining us for the hour. Sean Burkell, Maine's state climatologist, assistant professor with UMaine's Climate Change Institute and Cooperative Extension. Dan Burgess is director of the Governor's Energy Office, and Michael Stoddard, executive director of Efficiency Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, and Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find all of our past shows and sign up for Maine Calling's weekly newsletter at mainecalling.org. And you can share your thoughts with Maine Calling by using the Maine Public Vox Pop app. Download it, and you can easily record your comments. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss Maine's iconic summer camps and what they mean for the state's culture and economy. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Public, Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.